I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even in commentary. Nobody can touch me.
Hey there, wrestling fans, it is I, see, and I'm the best Jew in the world, here with a brand new episode of CM Jew's Wrestling Reviews right here on the Absolution Network, and this is episode 49, and this week, one last stop on our road before episode 50, as we continue down this hardcore road to ECW One Night Stand 2006. And that is WWE One Night Stand 2007. Things are about to get extreme. And speaking of extreme, that's something funny I have found. Throughout this first 50 of episodes, I think I kind of coughed up there, but the first 50 episode run, I should say, is that I found myself really wanting to do a lot of ECW. I think a lot of that had to do with two very important things. One, while definitely wanting to review WWE and Royal Rumbles and all that fun stuff, ECW programming, in particular ECW pay-per-views, were like one of my weak points, because while I remember WCW and while I may have not seen the pay-per-views, I was there watching Nitro, so I had some semblance of what was going on in the pay-per-views, where I really had no idea about ECW. And for information, I actually didn't get into ECW, and really get into is maybe a bad way of saying it. I really didn't even know ECW existed until 1999, when I happened to stumble upon it. 1999, I think it was like late 1999, maybe early 2000, when I stumbled onto it. I think it was 2000, actually. I think that's when they actually made it down south and they got put on. And I know Paul Heyman, I think, talked about it in his documentary, being put on the Florida Sports Network that was down there. Because that's actually where I remember seeing it. Of course, wasn't advertised, and it was like late at night, like 2 a.m., 3 a.m. in the morning. So my knowledge of ECW, particularly pre-2000, very, very limited. With that being said, again, adding to it, the fact that I was there for the most part, I knew what was going on in WCW. I've been more attracted to follow ECW and everything that came because of it. The more extreme pay-per-views, like Extreme Rules, One Night Stands, that WWE has had. Certainly, anybody, even if you have very little knowledge of what ECW was, you can see that ECW had a huge influence on WWE, and particularly in drive for the Attitude Era and the sort of hardcore genre that it inspired. Certainly is there, and of course, part of that probably had to do in 97 with ECW invading WWE. There seems to be a lot of invading by ECW on WWE. You know, and that's really the funny thing to talk about is looking back at this, and I had just recently watched ECW One Night Stand 2006, which I'll be talking with some other people, some special guests. I'll allude to that at the end of the program today. But, you know, really looking at it, maybe they should have gone with the whole invasion angle again, instead of having ECW be its own show. Because certainly, ECW One Night Stand 2007 took place, it was like a year after, you know, ECW had launched. And obviously, Paul Heyman was happy. I don't think a lot of people were happy. And I think maybe the limited roster that it had called for maybe not so much its own programming, but rather it may have worked better if it was just this rival faction of wrestlers that were both on Raw and SmackDown, and they were trying to gain control of one program or the other, or maybe both. That may have made it work better. And again, this is something we'll also talk about next episode a whole lot more in talking about how certain matches went down, because, and I think that's why that particularly sticks in my head more. But you know, one thing is, again, because I was doing it backwards, in particular, I think I did the first night of the first year of Extreme Rules, and then I did 2008 and 7 for 47, 48, and 49, which this episode is. You know, I've seen it get 2009, Extreme Rules wasn't that bad, but, certainly, WWE One Night Stand 2008 wasn't as good as this one. This one isn't good. It got progressively worse, and it's definitely something tied to ECW One Night Stand 2005, which, of course, I have already reviewed. And the fact of the matter is, again, it should make it obvious that when you have a show that's just so perfect, every year afterwards, you know, that bar is set so high, it's impossible to reach. Again, something I'll be talking about next week is how 2006 probably came the close to that, but didn't make it by far, I think. Again, I'll have a lot more to say about ECW One Night Stand 2006, the next episode, episode 50, the epic, epic episode. Certainly, with that being said, ECW One Night Stand didn't measure up in a lot of ways. Of course, not ECW, but WWE One Night Stand 2007, I should say. So this may be one of those short episodes, because certainly every match I'm going to talk about, it wasn't bad, it wasn't good, it was somewhere in that middle ground, and but at the end of the day, I was left very much disappointed, I think. But we'll get to all that and more as we get into the review of WWE One Night Stand 2007. So let me give you the rundown so we can get into it. WWE One Night Stand 2007 took place on June 3rd, 2007, to an attendance of 7,000 at the Jacksonville Veteran Memorial Arena in Jacksonville, Florida. The sponsor was Gillette, because the best shave a man can get. The theme song, which you won't be hearing here, is Famous by Puddle of Mud. You also won't hear it in the actual pay-per-view on the WWE Network, because, again, licensed music and had to be taken out. You also see an appearance made in the Lumberjack match made by one Chris Benoit. And that is probably one of the last references, at least in this episode, that you will hear about Chris Benoit, except for around the Lumberjack. Don't worry, there will be no discussion about the whole Chris Benoit controversy. I just wanted to put that out of your mind because he really has no importance here. He really doesn't do anything in the goddamn lumberjack match either. We'll get to that. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get into our review of ECW. I'm so excited for ECW One Night Stand 2006. I can't wait. But before that, which is next week's episode, let's get into this week's episode and our review of WWE One Night Stand 2007. Could not see. In this case, it was Santino Marinella versus Chris Masters, which he won in a short 4-minute, 13-minute match. Again, I can't tell you exactly how it went. It was more than likely with a roll-up. Of course, this very recently, there was the debut of the Milan America Santino Marinella. He would also have a little moment before the pudding match. You hear that, T-Dub? Pudding match. Your favorite. to where, you know, the Candice Marcel asked for a kiss for luck. And like, oh, me? And then, of course, not Mickey James. Not Chrissy Henney either. It's, Maria. I can't remember her name. But gives the kiss instead and goes, I love America. I'm like, eh, I can't argue with him there. Anyways, stupid little funny bits. Ignoring that and in this match off of which we couldn't see. Our first match of the night proper is a stretcher match with RVD facing Randy Orton. And I find it very funny that this is yet our second straight stretcher match in a row covering where, you know, because of course at ECW One Night Stand 2008 there'd be another stretcher match of Batista versus Shawn Michaels. That stretcher match I think was a lot more entertaining because of the story put forth by Chris Jericho, Batista and Shawn Michaels. Whereas here, this was a really good match. Both RVD and Randy Orton did, I think, a really good job. It was a really good opening match. It would end up being the third longest match of the night. So as an opening match, it was really, really good. But the story being told in here wasn't so much told in the match and the stretcher match and some feud. The story here was more of the building up of Randy Orton to being the, you know, the punter, the person who was putting people out of commission, which would eventually build him up towards being a challenger for John Cena. That would ultimately lead to him getting the title as well. Of course, that of course had a lot more to probably do with Cena getting injured in a match with him than anything to do with, you know, him being built up as this, you know, career killer. But this, you see, like, this is where that star, he was sort of beginning. But overall, it was a decent match. It just didn't have the energy that the one in 2008 would have. So, wrestling-wise, they put on a really good show. But again, that energy I don't think was there. And that story really wasn't there until the end of the match. And just because, again, with a stretcher match, you're expecting this epic struggle where the person is put out of commission and they're just out, and the person builds up to, you know, the epic moment of pushing them across the line. I think of, again, Michaels, Batista. Batista destroyed Michaels and then pushed him past the line. And the way he was just like that. I think of, again, when we reviewed Judgment Day, way back in one of the early episodes, where it was Brock Lesnar versus the Big Show in a stretcher match. And, Brock Lesnar tries to kill him with a forklift. Huzzah! And forklifts him on a stretcher past the line. You know, there's something epic to those. You know, stretcher match finish should be epic. Here, it was a kick to the head and then a push of it while Orton was dazed. It's like, I lost? I don't lose? Now I'm going to punch you. So, decent match, but just didn't have the story, didn't have the energy, and they, didn't have the epic finish I was looking for in a stretcher match. The next match is a six-man tables match where CM Punk and the ECW originals of The Sandman and Tommy Dreamer faced the new breed of Elijah I Get Scared by Ghosts on Ghost Hunter Live Special Burke. Matt, I am much better as a commentator, especially with Jim Ross Stryker. And Marcus Cor Vaughn, Mr. TNA. Besides the fact that I think WWE really missed on an opportunity with Marcus Cor Vaughn as at least a good mid-carder, because I think he could have been more than just what he was. It was an okay match, but with the exception of the finish, which was interesting, the superplexing, I believe, of Matt Stryker through Elijah Burke, who was on the table. A lot of this match felt just sloppy. This wasn't the Sandman. Part of it, I definitely think, is the fact that this wasn't the Sandman of old. Of course, it couldn't be the Sandman of old. In some sense, it's hard to see how do you evolve that character beyond what he was in ECW. Sandman, I think, is just one of those wrestlers that he could have only worked in old school ECW. He only works in that environment where you can cross the line. You can be hardcore. And it's nothing against him as a wrestler. I know there was a very recent Jericho podcast, which I really want to listen to, where he talked with Balls Mahoney. And just the shame that, Balls was much more, could do much more than just hardcore, but because he was part of that system, he got typecast. But at the same point in time, there are wrestlers, and I think Sandman is one of them, who the only system that could work for him was that hardcore system. And particular where this brand of hardcore is very lightened. Because I do agree with Paul Heyman, because in watching these, one of the things I've also watched is the ECW Exposed. I think that Paul Heyman is a genius. I think a lot of people have known that for years, but it's like something, I've come to the conclusion after watching the podcast and they did with Stone Cold recently, several of the podcasts that he's done with Stone Cold, and of course watching the documentary on him, and he's just, you know, he is just a genius, and I will follow him to the ends of the earth. But yeah, I think this match is a great example of something that Paul Heyman had been saying, or at least definitely said on the ECW Exposed, that, you know, the whole blood and gore had run its course. And even though WWE was able to extend it, their own brand, that was a little bit more lighter, and was less blood and gore, but more high, big spots and everything, you know, it had run its course. I think this match is a perfect example of this, because it is kind of sloppy and everything. And more importantly, the feud between the New Breed and the Originals, I think, had also run its course. I think that's also obvious in this match. So, an okay match, really, but really nothing special. Just very obvious that a lot of things as part of this feud had run its course. Our next match is the match I think I had the biggest disappointment of. It would be the longest match of the night. It was for the WWE World Tag Team Championships, as the Hardy Brothers of Matt and Jeff faced the world's greatest tag team in a ladder match. Now, the Hardys, which are just masters of the ladder match, along with Edge and Christian, but the Hardys, and you throw in, which was one of the great tag teams of that Ruthless Aggression era, up to this, or what the Ruthless Aggression was, because this is 2007, it's starting to go out of that Ruthless Aggression era. I think, well, I'm one of the people that really thinks, like, by the time we get to WrestleMania 24, I would really actually put it at SummerSlam 2007, to be quite honest, that the Ruthless Aggression era had ended. And I really point to that as being more PG. Right around the time Cena gets... Actually, I would say more around the time that Cena got injured. And then, of course, when he came back, he was a lot more PG. So I would say that Cena's injury is really what marks the end of the Ruthless Aggression era. And so this is definitely part of that tail end of it. These wrestlers, I mean, God damn it, Charlie Haas had a lot of energy and was epic in this match. And then there were a lot of great spots. My problem ultimately with this match is that I just didn't feel like there was a story told into it. You know, you watch Edge and Christian and the Hardys and the Dudleys and their TLCs and their ladder matches and the such, and there's a story. It's not just, hey, we're building up these spots and we're just built. There is somewhat of a story here. I didn't feel like there is a story. I also think it lacked fluidity. There are some great spots. In particular, again, the classic World Greatest Tag Team maneuver. You know, of course, normally it's, you know, Charlie Haas holding the legs, holding them up, and then Shelton Benjamin leaps over and onto the back. Here, on the apron, and he's holding on a ladder and everything, and Shelton Benjamin leaps from a ladder and, like, onto the back and everything. It's just, it's big, and of course, Jeff Hardy does some big maneuvers and everything. In particular, the ending just didn't feel epic enough for an epic finish. You know, there was nothing building to that finish. It just felt like it happened, and it's like, this is the match I was looking for, because I know the World's Greatest Tag Team was a great tag team, and of course, the Hardys were a great tag team, in particular in ladder matches, and I just felt disappointed by the end of the match. There was no build-up to the end. Again, a lot of it was missing that epicness that, you know, you came to expect. And that's one thing I disagree with on the idea of, like, well, the problem is that, you know, before you've built up these dangerous moves and you can't top them. It's not the spots that are the problem. It's the building up. In particular, in this time, and I think it's the one thing that ultimately is the reason why the PG era was hurt, is that a lot of matches they didn't build up to the end. Again, they forgot how to tell the story of the match, and they forgot how to build towards that ending. You can have spots all you want. I think the recent Money in the Bank ladder match is a great example of this. They built up to that ending. They built up that story for Sheamus to win. So even though you didn't have these epic, big, dangerous ladder spots, which I think you can still have, to be quite honest, but they're probably not going to have as long as we have all these concussion lawsuits going on. You know, you can have a match that doesn't have big spots as long as the story builds up to that epic conclusion. So ultimately with this match, for the good spots that it had in it, I just felt disappointed by it. It was a really good, solid ladder match. It's the longest match of the night, and there's really big spots, of course. The seat of the senton by Jeff. They almost sent Shelton Benjamin through the ladder. Shelton Benjamin, the world greatest tag team maneuver by Shelton Benjamin, where he comes on the back on the ladder. But yeah, it just felt like they were going through the motions. So our next match tonight is, I know this may be a controversial thing to say, by my means, is the worst match of the night. And I know there's a lot of people that say the pudding match should be the worst. And certainly, I'm not arguing that it was bad, and it's a close second. But just for me, the problem is that this is a lumberjack match. Half the lumberjacks didn't do anything, except for the heel lumberjacks who were just attacking Kane. And the match was just boring. I mean, first of all, it's a lumberjack match between Kane and Mark Henry. It ends with Kane getting the life squeezed out of him in a bear hug. And it just felt like, I felt bored watching this. You know, even though the match lasted only 10 minutes, it felt like it went on for at least 15. It's like, I'm falling asleep watching this match. Is it over yet? And I'm trying to pay attention. And that's no disrespect to Kane, no disrespect to Mark Henry. But the problem is that you have all those lumberjacks who really aren't doing nothing. You know, except for the heels who were getting little spots here and there and attacking Kane. They weren't attacking Mark Henry. In particular when, you know, Kenny Dykstra and some of them got involved when Kane hit the choke slam. Just none of it felt any sense. And again, it goes back to story. What was the story they were telling? I don't understand the story they were telling. And I really didn't feel the story they were telling. And I just felt bored. And we'll talk about it more when we get to the pudding match. But at least the pudding match didn't bore me. Not for those reasons. But we'll get to that. But the fact of the matter is, this match just bored me to death, and I was tired. And like, I gotta go take a nap now, I'm just too tired. So, with that, we'll actually get into one of the more exciting matches of the evening. As Bobby Lashley faced Mr. McMahon in a street fight for the ECW World Championship. Or it could be World Championship. I was going to say World Heavyweight Championship, but World Championship. Of course, with Shane McMahon and Umaga by Vince's side. And this was a very exciting match. Just starting off with an extreme botch by Bobby Lashley, where he forgot to let go of the goddamn rope. Because the match starts with him going after Umaga and going to do this big leap. And where he like flips himself over the rope, except that he forgot to do one thing, and that's like go over the top rope. And so he actually swings around. Great job by, I think, Umaga to, you know, get under it so the, at least his foot hit him and seemed like Bobby Lashley did some damage. Ultimately, the problem that lies with this match is this. as if this is a match we've seen before. We've seen it with Stone Cold versus the McMahons. We've seen it with The Rock and the McMahons. We've seen it... who else have we seen? I think we've seen it with Foley and the McMahons. Who else would we see it with? Ultimately, just this felt like a match that we've seen before, especially with Austin. And then just it felt like done before. You see a lot of spots that are done before, as amazing they are. Of course, Shane, you know, anytime Shane does the diving leap from the top rope to the announcer's table for the elbow or the coast to coast, they're very amazing maneuvers and highlights of the night. And I will say this, Bobby Lashley, I will remember being very invested in the story of Bobby Lashley spearing the hell out of Vince, not once, but twice. You know, I really enjoyed that. I think ultimately, though, is that it just felt like this has been done to death. And that's something that kind of hurt it. But overall, this is a very, very enjoyable match. None of the more longer ones of the night, given some proper time. Again, this is another match, and I would say this for most of the matches, is that a lot of them felt like they went on longer than they did. And that's another, I think, troubling thing for a lot of these matches, is that it felt like they were killing time, and ultimately a lot of these matches, you know, felt like they were just stalling, and they could have gone faster, and because it lacked that speed, you know, that hurt it and made the matches feel longer than they were. To an extent, you know, in a lot of matches, I kind of lost bits of interest in each. But overall, a very enjoyable match. And again, it's always great to see Vince McMahon get his comeuppance, because Vince McMahon is always one of the best bad guys out there. You always enjoy seeing Vince get his comeuppance. You know, Vince McMahon, you can say what you want for him, but he knows the fans blame him, and he knows he makes a good bad guy, and he does a great job of building towards himself getting that comeuppance. Speaking of comeuppance, our next match is the pudding match between Candice Michelle and the women's champion, Melina. Now, as much as I would like to see him and say, next, kind of have to talk about something here. You know, one is the fact of why this isn't the worst match of the night. It's the second worst, but trust me, it is. But again, going back to why the Lumberjack match was worse is because, one, the Lumberjack did nothing. That match was boring, whereas this was interesting. And the reason it was interesting is for this. It was mildly interesting to see a pudding match in 2007. And I think I was more invested in how the crowd was watching it. You know, the guys were like, is this over? It's very funny to see the guy fans going, yeah, kind of turns me on, but is this over yet? It's like, I'm bored. Meanwhile, the female fans are there was this line of female fans that were like, just like, this is, and I literally saw her go like, wow, this is awesome. It's like, really? You're finding this? I'm more offended than you? Something's wrong here. Okay. Of course, the referee gets dragged in. It's always fun to see the referee get dragged in. Because Maria gets involved after Candace forces Melina to tap out due to a new, we'll call it the pudding choke, to where she's dunking her head. And mind you, they're in bathing suits. It's like, who thought this was a good idea? What motherfucker thought this was a good idea? I mean, I'm willing to bet my money it was Kevin fucking Dunn. It's like, We want to continue this feud at the pay-per-view, but we really don't know what would make a great extreme match for these divas to put in. Hey, here's an idea. How about an extreme rules match? Because I faintly recall very recently, in fact, I think it was a Survivor Series pay-per-view, Survivor Series 2002 to be more exact, that there was a match between Victoria and Trish Stratus. That was an extreme rules match that I watched. That was pretty damn good. You know, you can have women bleed. You know that, right? But there is one more thing in watching this match that I just want to kind of say. You know, you may say all you want about, you know, for instance, when I did Judgment Day 2003, we did the bikini contest between Sable and Tori, or the bikini contest that we covered this year when we did Royal Rumble 2000. And yes, I'm looking at UTWK. At least those contests were based on athletic competition. There was an athletic competition. I'll bet the competition of my athletic body is better than your athletic body, but still is there, and there's a natural story that goes with it that allows for heels and faces to face off with each other, and it tells great storytelling. There is no story here. There is no athletic competition. So for everybody that hates those swimsuit contests, yeah, would you rather they have pudding fights or mud wrestling matches? Because I'd much rather have the swimsuit contest where there is some athletic competition going on rather than this. I'm just saying. And then I'll get off my high horse from that. This would bring us, thankfully, to our final two matches of the night. The first being for the World Heavyweight Championship as Edge faced Batista in a steel cage. It's kind of hard to see where they were going with this. Again, a lot of this was built because they would have the whole year-long feud with Edge and Undertaker. It's a solid match, but again, it seemed like the match could have gone faster. I mean, the match was 15 minutes long, or over 15 minutes, but it felt like they probably could have done this match in, like, 10, 11 minutes. It definitely felt like they stalled and just, like, filler or whatever, and it's just... Yeah, I'm bored with this. I shouldn't be bored, but I am. That being said, when they weren't taking their time and they were actually wrestling, the wrestling was good. And I did like the finish. I did like the sort of race aspect. And the reason I like it is that, you know, again, it showed Batista as a trainee of Ric Flair. You know, yeah, he's been low blow, but he knows he has to get out. So it's that race for the door while he's going over the top. And, of course, Edge wins. It tells his character story well. So overall, I did like it, and it was a fairly enjoyable match, but it felt like it just took too much time. That also brings us to our final match of the night. So Edge versus Batista in the cage. Okay match, but there's just, again, it was missing that epicness. It just felt like it dragged on. And the same for the next match. It had an epic ending. Just there was a certain epicness I felt like it was missing from it. For a certain reason I'll get into. But Edge versus Batista I felt could have been more. Again, I think it lacked energy. Is I think ultimately why that epicness wasn't there. They didn't have a lot of energy in this match. But our last match tonight is for the WWE Championship as the champion John Cena defends against the Great Khali in a Falls Count Anywhere match. Or as Taz would say, Falls Count anywhere in the building. This was an okay match. Ultimately, the problem with this is John Cena brings a lot of energy into all his matches. The problem is the Great Khali. And what the Great Khali was. And they built him up right, but still, at the end of the day, in particular, this was at this point after the Judgment Day match in which John Cena won. But the problem is that, again, it's a storyline that I think is played out. That whole idea of, here's this great champion, and now he has to face this giant. You know, it worked with Hogan and Andre, because Andre wasn't just a giant. He had this massive history, this undefeated streak behind him, that really lent itself to that. And then the rivalry just worked from there. And, you know, it's worked in other cases, Rock and Big Show, and other things like that. But here, you know, Khali just too stiff, just too green, doesn't carry a lot of energy. And it just felt like, you know, we know John Cena's going to win. And again, that's no offense to John Cena. Unfortunately, I think a lot of fans place that blame on John Cena. And even on Vince, though Vince probably does deserve some responsibility for that. But ultimately, it's because the Great Khali is an attraction. He is not a wrestler. And, you know, it's okay to be an attraction, but it's hard to put an attraction in a heavyweight title match and have that title match have great energy. I will say this, I think John Cena and the Great Khali did do a great job of building towards the finish, which is something a lot of matches, I think, didn't do right. I think maybe only the Lashley-McMahon fight did it as well, to where they built towards the finish. And you know what? Here, I think the finish was epic enough. It's certainly a moment of the night. It's certainly probably the only moment that's remembered from the pay-per-view, where John Cena FUs the Great Khali off the goddamn crane. I mean, it's like, it's over. Pin the motherfucker and let's leave. You're not getting off from getting FU'd off a cane. Certainly, it built John Cena's character as a good win with an epic finish. And Great Khali would continue on to ultimately be a great attraction. And at least 6 more months of being a threat to wrestlers like The Undertaker and Batista and matches like the Bon Jovi pole match or whatever the guy did. That cage match where they were in bamboo. The Bon Jovi prison match, excuse me. It's certainly one of the... I don't think it's like one of the greatest matches of John Cena's career by any means. But I think it's definitely one of those matches, like, you want to see John Cena do something spectacular, it's worth watching for that. Because it certainly was a spectacular moment at the end of the match. And again, at least John Cena brought energy. There's a lot of wrestlers, I think, in this night. Overall, looking back at this pay-per-view, there's a lot of energy that was missing. A lot of wrestlers, I think, just didn't bring that energy. It seemed like they were stuck in between third and fourth gear. And then you had... Really, the wrestlers that did it were Vince, Shane, Umaga, Lashley, and John Cena. That really not only took into fourth gear, but then broke it into that fifth gear. And brought the energy. But the others, I just didn't feel the energy there. It's like... It just felt like a night of Raw or SmackDown with the other matches where, as, you know, in particular the Lashley-Mr. McMahon match, and with John Cena's match, mostly due to John Cena, there's a lot more energy and it had a more pay-per-view feel to it, even if they weren't great matches. So, let's go down the line with top moments. Moment number three. I'm going to say is the from the ladder match. Again, the world's greatest tag team maneuver with Shelton Benjamin coming off the ladder onto, I believe, the back of Matt Hardy, it was. Who was strung up on the ladder and being held by Charlie Haas. So coming from the ladder inside the ring to the outside, onto the back, just amazing maneuver. Number two, Bobby Lashley spearing Mr. McMahon, because it's always fun to see Mr. McMahon get his comeuppance. And mind you, again, like the ladder match, there's a lot to choose from that match, and like I feel like I only pick one. Because again, obviously number one has to be the moment that's remembered most from this pay-per-view, and that's John Cena F-U-ing the Great Khali off the crane. And with that, we get to our top three matches. Number three, just because it had a little bit more storytelling than the rest, I would say Edge and Batista in the cage match. Number two would be John Cena versus the Great Khali, because John Cena's energy gave it this, at least tried to give it this big fight feel that was there in places and there and it wasn't. But, you know, did a great job of ultimately pulling out a very decent match out of what could have been a disaster. But the match that had the most energy and told the most story and just overall was the most fun to watch was Bobby Lashley versus Mr. McMahon and his, with Shane and Umaga by his side. And ultimately, Bobby Lashley regaining the ECW World Championship. Of course, ultimately, the coming months that would lead to, you know, Bobby Lashley, or at least by the next pay-per-view. The next pay-per-view was Great American Bash, so I think it would be by July. He would give up it because he would face, again, John Cena at the Great American Bash, which I've seen the match. I actually think it's a very good match between the two. I think, unfortunately, it was just a bit too early to put Bobby Lashley into the main event. And they ultimately sped up his development too fast, which I think is ultimately the problem of Bobby Lashley in the WWE, is they sped it up and then other things happened. But that's besides the point. That's for another day. So ultimately, I can't exactly say I suggest this pay-per-view. It's got several moments, but it's just most of the matches are missing energy, they're missing storytelling, and they're missing that build to their finish. And I just found myself being bored a lot of times. So I give ECW One Night Stand 2007 a 2 out of 5. Just missing a lot. I mean, the matches are okay and good, but it just feels like a lot of time they're going through the motion and they're very... It's that lack of energy that really hurts it. So that is it for this episode of CMJews Wrestling Reviews. If any comments, emails, or anything you want to say, in particular as we go into episode 50... Remember, there are several ways to contact us. One, you can email us at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can also contact us on Stitcher by going to www.stitcher.com. Like us and leave us a comment there. And you can always leave a comment on our Facebook page by searching for the Absolution Network on Facebook. And last but not least, you can find us and leave us a comment at the website itself, which you can find at www.an.132productions.com. And of course, while you're there, check out all the other 132 Productions content. That, of course, includes John Ramos and his Toku videos, Shin Tiger Curl and his wrestling videos and his Let's Plays. And of course, all my stuff, which includes Tom's Prerogative, Tom's Top 10, the Intergalactic Graphic Review. I may be having some other stuff starting to join in July. And of course, right now, I'm also putting out my Anime Next 2015 specials, which has a wrestling segment in it that you may find a bit funny. So all that and more on the Absolution Network, and of course, Comic Book Crazy featuring Hexcast and Comic Book Crazy at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com, and of course, Tokyo SOS and Godzilla Podcast that you can find at www.tokyoSOS.132productions.com. And that is it for this episode of CM. Oh, before I forget, I'm sorry. I almost forgot. Make sure you check out all our friends on the sidebar of our site, like Michael Bailey and Views from Lombox, Matty J and TWK, on Podomatic, where their shows are right now, Scott Gardner and the 2-2 Freaks Podcasting Network, Spidey Dude and Clone Circuit Chronicles, and many more. So check them out on the sidebar of the site. Like I said, though, that's it for this episode 49 of CM Jews Wrestling Reviews. Next episode, episode 50. It's epic as we go back to the Hammerstein Ballroom at the Manhattan Center in New York City, New York, as it is time once again for ECW One Night Stand 2006. We'll see Ken, the direct sequel to the epic ECW One Night Stand 2005, live up to the hype. As we watch and see if RVD can defeat John Cena as he cashes in his Money in the Bank. Will RVD become the new WWE/ECW champion? Or is there a riot at the Hammerstein Ballroom? All that and more as I am joined by my good friends Matty J and TWK from the WrestleCast, and maybe some other special guests, as we review ECW One Night Stand 2006. So until next episode, my wrestling fans, I want you to remember one goddamn thing about me. CM Jew. I'm the best Jew in the world!
You're all that I have and you're all that I need. Each and every day I pray to get to know you. Please wanna be close to you, yes, I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you, there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around, all around, I bring me down to negative vibe. But I believe, yes, I believe, I said I believe. Stand among the feet, one beat down on one knee. I fight with all of my might to get these demons to flee. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. How the darkness comes light, twilight unto the heights. Crown lights burning up, out to the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my mind. Stealing my love will be for holding and stealing. I give myself to you from the essence of my being. And I sing to my God songs of love and healing. I want Mashiach now. Time it starts a feeling. What's this feeling? My love will be holding a ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being. And I sing to my God songs of love and healing. I want Mashiach now. Stripping away the layers and reveal your soul. You gotta give yourself up and then you become whole. You're a slave to yourself and them don't even know. Them mother to live that fast life, but